Morning.
Are you all ready to move forward on MCLC versus DMAS?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yes, Your Honor.
Great. Mr. Schmidt, correct? Excuse me. Mr. Schmidt, would you like to reserve any time for rebuttal?
I'd like to reserve 2 minutes, if I might, Your Honor.
Yes, sir. And you may begin whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honors. Again, my name is Paul Schmidt of the firm of Poolbrook Plumley, Virginia Beach. I'm here on behalf of the appellant, Morrison Comprehensive Learning Center, LLC. This is a dispute over Medicaid reimbursements. This case has had opportunity to rule on these types of issues in a couple of recent cases, and that is the sharp point of contention that we have before us today. The main question is, does contract law determine the appropriate penalty for a violation of DMAS regulations, in essence, a material breach analysis? That is the analysis that was used by the agency. If you look at the final agency decision at page 4, and these were things that were upheld by the director, the department stated a material breach analysis is not appropriate because the authorities for the error codes at issue in this appeal are the department's regulations. And it goes on to say that based on the holding in DMAS versus patient transport systems, the department stated, which the department states, holds that a strict liability standard applies to noncompliance with regulatory violations. That is the standard that was applied throughout the final agency decision. And in fact, the hearing officer was reprimanded in one section for attempting to apply a material breach analysis. So this is in opposite to the other cases that have appeared before this court.
Talk to us about Culpepper.
Well, Your Honor, Culpepper is probably the closest on point, and I believe that is why the Attorney General's office makes it a pillar of its decision. In essence, if you look at Culpepper, the operative language that they use, let me skip to that, is that the contract displaces ordinary principles of substantial compliance. And the Attorney General's office has basically taken that to uphold the strict liability standards, saying, well, we've got a contract, but because the contract gives certain remedies to the department, substantial compliance analysis goes out the window, see Culpepper. My only problem with that position is that the only place where the court explicitly says that the contract displaces ordinary principles of substantial compliance is that heading. It's nowhere else mentioned. If you go on to look at the body of Culpepper, the court goes through the factors of a material breach analysis and says, just like we did in Patient Solutions, just like we did in First Stop Health Services, we find that there was a material breach. And because there is a material breach, we're entitled to our contract relief, and one of those contract relief remedies is to withhold all payment.
But didn't Culpepper discuss the material breach only to the extent that it didn't apply because the contract displaced it?
Yes, I believe that's true. And you can also see some of that in
One Stop.
I'm actually going back all the way back to Psychiatric Solutions. If you go back to Psychiatric Solutions, they discuss the dichotomy between material breach and substantial compliance analysis and say such principles are merely the inverse of the material breach principles set out in the text. That's the apocryphal footnote 5 relied upon by counsel. He goes down a little bit further in that particular footnote and it tries to minimize footnote 5 by saying, we need not decide here whether any breach or material breach of the provider agreement permitted DMAS to demand repayment because, based on the factual findings, we compel that the breach was material.
Well, but was the issue of whether a material breach is required even an issue in that case?
Your Honor, I would argue that that is the heart and soul of Patient Solution based upon the references made in both the final agency decision and the first round of briefings that occurred before Judge Stout out of the Attorney General's office. Because, again, what they held out Psychiatric Solutions was for the principle that, oh, if it's a violation of a guidance manual as opposed to a regulation or a statute, then a material breach analysis would apply if you have a material, if you have a violation of a regulation or a statute, that goes out the window based on patient transport, and a strict liability standard comes into play. No material breach analysis is necessary, and that is the heart and soul of the final agency decision. Now, the Attorney General has since shifted its attention to Culpepper. Again, Culpepper came out after the first round of briefings in this case, and obviously well after the final agency decision. But again, I think that that attempt to try and use patient transport to stand for that principle is a little bit misleading, simply because you have to look at the basis of patient transport. Patient transport talks about, I think it's dash 530, which has to do with appeals and the requirements that apply to DMAS. So I'm sorry, it's 12 VAC 30-20-540, not 530, 540. And at the end of Part B, which talks about the written case summary, which of course was the reversible error that was found in patient transport, the regulation in and of itself says that failure to file a written case summary with the appeals division in the detail specified within 30 days of the filing of the provider's notice of appeal shall result in dismissal in favor of the provider on those issues not addressed in the detail specified. Again, this is fascinating because this is DMAS being held to strict compliance with regulations. The difference here, and I think that this is the critical difference, is that as Judge Hall of this very courtroom said, and as I believe some of the other cases that we've discussed would uphold, is that the provider is responsible for compliance with these regulations because of signing the provider agreement. It is, in essence and at its heart, a contractual relationship between the provider and the state. And that's not what we have here. We have DMAS failing to live up to its own appellate guidelines. DMAS obviously does not sign a contract. It has no choice but to comply with its regulations, doubly so because they're its own agency regulations, and presumably the agency crafted these regulations. And so thus to have them held strictly against the agency seems natural and right. But again, when you turn to what happens to the provider, that is a contractual relationship. And I think a material breach analysis, as was applied in all the other cases but patient transport, should be applied in the instant case here.
Counsel, if we were to agree with you, would the remedy be to remand it back for a factual determination?
Well, Your Honor, I would ask that the case be completely vacated and that payment be made to my client.
How could that happen in light of your claim that there's no factual findings relating to a material breach?
Well, I would argue that basing your entire agency decision on a misreading of patient transport is arbitrary and capricious, and the financial pain and suffering that that's inflicted upon my client, I mean, just to stay alive. Well, Your Honor, in the alternative, and I certainly understand where the court is coming from, in the alternative, yes, in the absence of any finding whatsoever of the materiality of the breach, then the agency should, at a minimum, go back and find out and discuss whether the breaches were indeed material. If so, then we can go on to the next stage, which is to say, do they want to apply the strongest and most stringent of contractual remedies that it has available to it, or should it, as Patient Solutions would suggest, perhaps take a look at the materiality and just how much suffering, or how much wrong was done to the agency.
Counsel, let's go back to Culpepper.
Yes, Your Honor.
I understand that they address psychiatric solutions, talking about material breach. They talked about first stop, talking about material breach. But then when it got to the finding paragraph, they made no finding that there was a material breach. I don't know. I assume you have a copy of that case.
Yes, Your Honor, I certainly do.
Turning to the case at bar. And as I read that, they make no finding of a material breach. They simply found that they violated the provisions of the manual.
And, Your Honor, again, I would refer back to some of the language that's in patient transport. Patient transport never uses the quote-unquote strict liability. What patient transport really says is plain language of the regulation or the statute at bar.
But the issue was never before the court in that case, the issue of material breach.
Right, which again is why I find it unique that the agency would then use that as to set up its own strict liability standard and then apply that to prevent a material breach analysis ever being performed, because that's what the final agency decision attempts to do. Again, I would look back to the language of both 540B that I just discussed.
Counsel, let me interrupt you. I'm not sure you answered my question about the finding paragraph.
Your Honor, I think I would agree that it does not use the exact language of material breach. But if you would take a look at 42 CFR 456.60, which is the regulation that the hospital is alleged to have violated or did violate, certification is all over this. It says certification of need for care. Certification and recertification of need for inpatient care. A, certification. A physician must certify. 2, the certification must. B, recertification. The physician or physician assistant must recertify for each patient. 2, recertification must be made at least 60 days after certification. It's a very short regulation. They use the word certify or certification or recertification at least 6 times in the body of it. And I would argue that what the court did is apply a plain language reading of that particular regulation and sit there and say, look, this is all about certification. You failed to certify. There's absolutely no way you can be found to have complied or even partially complied with it, because certification is the heart and soul. We find you didn't do that. In essence, that is very akin to a material breach analysis. It's a violation of the plain reading of the statute. That is like 540B in patient transport, where it says if the agency fails to do X, then the case shall be decided in favor of the provider. Again, it's the use of the word shall, as opposed to what it is in A17, which is the stick language of the regulations that gives DMAS the power to remand these payments, which uses a may standard. And that's part of the problem, is that DMAS has jettisoned the use of the word may and has simply said it's shall, it always will be shall, and it's going to be shall without any look to whether the breach was material or there was substantial compliance or any of it, because we read patient transport to say strict liability, which is not technically what it says. It says plain language. And that is the heart and soul of the debate. And I don't believe that you can harmonize that particular strict liability interpretation with the holdings in psychiatric solutions. And then when I read on to the court's more recent cases like First Stop and Culpepper, in essence, they go through all the steps that one would expect of a material breach analysis. And in First Stop, they expressly did a material breach analysis. They said, we may be deciding without necessarily looking at that precise issue, but in all the cases where a retraction of this magnitude was upheld, this court held a material breach analysis, or at least a heightened scrutiny of the violation that was being alleged by the agency.
Mr. Schmidt, I'll give you kind of your two-minute warning at this point in time, where you're getting awfully close to your rebuttal time, so I'll leave it up to you as to how you'd like to use your time most productively.
Thank you, Your Honor. I think we've hit all the high points, and I would like to save my time and allow Mr. Azamuddin to speak. Thank
Sir,
you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Begin. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Abrar Azamuddin. I'm an Assistant Attorney General representing the Department of Medical Assistance Services. Your Honors, this Court, in clear and unequivocal language in Culpeper Regional Hospital versus Jones, stated that by the terms of the provider participation agreement, ordinary principles of substantial compliance were displaced. Now, the terms that were at issue in Culpeper are the same terms and provisions that are at issue here today. And so, accordingly, it should follow that ordinary principles of substantial compliance were displaced by the provider participation agreement that was entered into between the appellant and the Department of Medical Assistance Services.
Now, how do you reconcile psychiatric solutions with Culpeper?
Your Honor, the psychiatric solutions and First Stop even, although the court uses the term material breach, they, in their footnotes and in the language of each decision, they clearly stated that they don't necessarily, they didn't decide that they're going to determine whether a material breach is necessary to violate the provider participation agreement or an ordinary breach. In footnote In footnote 5 of Psychiatric Solutions, this court said, we need not decide here if a material breach or any breach allowed DMAS to demand repayment. And in First Stop on page 280, this court said, we need not decide whether, as a categorical matter, the principles of material breach of contract apply to provider agreements. They further stated that we assume, without deciding, that they do. So this court clearly didn't left that issue open for a decision later on, and I think Culpepper hit at the heart of that when they stated in clear language that by the terms of the provider participation agreement, that ordinary principles of substantial compliance were displaced. And in all the cases that have come before this court, Your Honors, whether it was First Stop, whether it was Psychiatric Solutions, or whether it was Culpepper, this court has never excused non-compliance with the department's regulations, manual provisions, or its statutes. And essentially, that's what the appellant would have you do here today, which is essentially have this court or issue a ruling which will have courts and hearing officers make a determination as to what level of non-compliance is acceptable. And clearly, in all the cases that have come before this court has never accepted that. And the provisions that were at issue in Culpepper are one of the same that were at issue here today. In Culpepper, the relevant provision in the Medicaid Providers Agreement said that the provider was required to comply with all applicable state and federal laws, as well as administrative policies and procedures of DMAS as from time to time amended. The same paragraph is at issue here today. Paragraph 8 of the appellant's agreement says the same thing, that the appellant is required to comply with all applicable and state federal laws as well as the administrative policies of DMAS as from time to time amended. In Culpepper,
I'm assuming that language is in every single provider agreement.
It is, Your Honor. And
if that's the case, then why would there ever be a material breach analysis?
And I don't think that there ever was a material breach analysis in this court's cases. I think that at times those cases were misinterpreted, and I think Culpepper shed light on it and made a clear and unequivocal determination that material breach is not applicable. And as a policy matter, it makes sense because the department is an administrative agency, and we cannot act in an arbitrary and capricious manner. If we don't apply the plain language and enforce the regulations as they are, then we'll be accused of acting in an arbitrary and capricious manner. Like, for example, one of the error codes at issue today was a nurse supervisory visit must be done within 30 days if there was a cognitive impairment. If the director starts accepting 31 days as a non-material breach, then we can never enforce that agreement ever again because providers will come forth and say, well, you accepted 31 days here. Why can't you accept 32 days? Why can't you accept 33 days? And so what we end up losing is the ability to enforce our regulations and manual provisions as clearly written. And I think that's why that provision was there in the provider participation agreement itself, to reemphasize and to state that all providers must comply with the department's regulations, manual provisions, and all applicable statutes and federal laws and regulations.
So are you essentially saying that it's a per se material breach if you fail to comply with one of the DMAS regs?
Yes, Your Honor. I mean,
a per se material breach based on...
If we applied the plain language of all the regulations and manual provisions, and if they don't meet the plain language, then yes, it's a breach, period. And that breach allows us to retract payment, which is exactly what we did here today.
Is that possibly why some of these other court opinions by this court talk about material breach?
I think so, but I think in those cases it was so clear-cut that there were violations. In Psychiatric Solutions, there was a requirement that there was 21 therapeutic interventions must be completed. 21 therapeutic interventions were not completed, and so it was a violation of the department's manual provisions. In First Stop, there was a requirement that the documentation be separated into respite care services versus personal care services. The provider failed to do that. This court upheld the director's finding that said failure to separate those documents and to maintain them in an orderly fashion is a violation of the provider participation agreement. It's simply, Your Honor, for lack of a better rule, the rule is very simple. Either you meet the requirement or you don't. And I think that's what the circuit court was swayed by, that on all these error codes and manual provisions that were at issue here today, that the appellant never met those requirements. I mean, these requirements were very simple. Get a criminal background check. Make sure that you don't alter our form so that you pre-populate check marks. Make sure you have a plan of care prior to providing services. And they simply did not have the documentation to show that they met those requirements. And so in all those cases, and then in Culpeper, this court has always recognized that noncompliance with the department's regulations will have consequences, and those consequences are laid out in our manual provision and our regulation, which state that the department can retract payment for failure to comply with the department's rules.
Your Honor. Counsel, I recognize that DMAS did not have the advantage of the Culpeper opinion. What do you have to say about opposing counsel's point that that the DMAS analysis was inconsistent with Culpeper?
Your Honor, I think that the reasoning for why they did what they did was not consistent with Culpeper, but the application was consistent. The director in the final agency decision applied the plain language, and it goes back to what I said, either the appellant complied with the regulation or they didn't. And so that application of the regulations and the manual provisions, the plain language, that is consistent with Culpeper, and it doesn't require a remand because all we'll do is apply the regulations and the manual provisions, the plain language of them, and come to the same conclusion again. Turning your attention to the other error codes that were at issue, or the other errors that were brought up by the appellant. The appellant argues that the failure to obtain background checks and reference checks is arbitrary and capricious. And again, like the other error codes that were at issue here, the appellant does not dispute that it obtained those criminal background checks and reference checks. They instead argue that the law does not mandate a retraction for employees who did not commit a barrier crime. And that's simply unfounded. As I referenced earlier, the department has a clear regulation and a manual provision that states noncompliance with the department's regulations will allow it to retract payment, which is exactly what it did today. It is not arbitrary and capricious to retract a payment when a regulation and a manual provision clearly allow the department to do so. Lastly, with error code 917, one of the errors that the appellant pointed to was that the director applied principles of material breach in her final agency decision. That clearly was not the case. All that the director did was apply the plain language of the requirement, which is that a plan of care must be in place prior to the provision of services. And so the appellant failed to do so, and the appellant properly upheld those findings. Your Honors, if there's nothing more, we ask that you uphold the circuit court's decision, and we ask that you uphold the final agency decision issued by the
Council,
director.
So that I understand you clearly, if the manual said that reports have to be filed on pink paper, and they didn't file on pink paper, they filed it on yellow paper, is your argument that payments should be retracted?
Yes, Your Honor. And I'm sure that there will be some sort of testimony or argument by providers that will say that yellow paper is better than pink paper. And I'm sure that the department will say, well, pink paper is better, and here's why. Ultimately, we don't want to get into this.
But consistent with your position, that argument shouldn't be relevant. What should be relevant is we told you to use pink paper, you didn't do so, you lose.
It should, and I agree with you. But if you adopt the appellant's argument, then we're just going to have to go through all these requirements and essentially present testimony at every hearing in the Commonwealth as to justify why we created the program that we did. Medicaid is the contract. There's a contract between Medicaid agency and Medicaid providers. We can design our program the way we want to, and the appellant here agreed to those requirements, even if it was pink paper or yellow paper.
Counsel, let me ask you this, going back to the criminal record check. It's pretty clear from the DMAS reg that if somebody is guilty of a barrier crime and they're in there, that DMAS, the penalty is that DMAS can take the money back. But the place that talks about the instance here is providers shall be responsible for complying with section so-and-so of the code regarding criminal record checks, and that's what you're relying on.
Yes, Your Honor.
Because the code then makes the requirements that you're talking about. But there's no specific penalty discussed for failure to comply with section so-and-so of the Virginia Code, whereas there is a penalty with regard, a very clear penalty with regard to barrier crimes.
Sure. Our regulation adopted that statute, and that statute requires that a background check must occur within 30 days of hiring an employee. The regulation, by virtue of adoption, is a requirement placed on all the providers and the appellant here in this case. If we don't necessarily, and we have a manual provision and a regulation that says failure to comply with the department's laws, which includes this regulation, which includes that statute by adoption, allows us to retract payment.
So you go back to the provider agreement.
Yes, Your Honor. It's a contract. We don't dispute that contract principles apply, but what we are saying is that by the terms of the agreement, that ordinary principles of substantial compliance were displaced. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. So I might just address a few of the points raised by the Attorney General. I would note that in the regulation you just discussed regarding barrier background checks, it says DMAS will not reimburse the provider for any service provided by an employee who is committed to barrier crime as defined herein. If Mr. Azmuddin's interpretation and the agency's interpretation of the case law stands, then the language DMAS will not reimburse the providers, that entire sentence is superfluous. And they are, in essence, reading the regulation to make a portion of it meaningless. And again, in patient transport, I believe, the court specifically talked about, we don't do that. We try not to read regulations in a way that makes a certain portion of them meaningless. Furthermore, I would go on to note the 17. Again, 17 is the hammer. It's the one that says, if you don't do this, we can do these things to you. The operative language is, a provider's noncompliance with DMAS's policies and procedures may result in retraction or termination of the provider agreement, or both. Again, they've applied this to regulations and guidance manuals and everything else beyond and above policies and procedures, but they have basically read the may out of this and turned this into a will or a shall situation. Any violation shall result. Well, that's not what the regulation says. And what they're
Well, may gives them the option.
It does give them the option, but that's not what the final agency decision says. The final agency decision says strict liability. There is no discretion to be exercised. We have read that out of our own regulations, and we shall do the following things upon any violation, no matter how slight. That's what the thing says. And again, he's impliedly asking you to overturn your ruling in Psychiatric Solutions, which says that, accordingly, in determining whether any deficiencies in the provisions of these 21 interventions per week or the documentation thereof support a retraction of payment, ordinary contract law principles apply. And apparently that is not the position of the Attorney General's office. I see I'm out of time. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. We will come down and greet counsel before moving on to the Gonzalez case.
All rise.